And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Be sure to go to theathletic.com/downtodunk and get The Athletic for $3.99 a month. Before I bring Mikelli in, I need to tell you guys about an event that we're hosting in 8 days. It's the NBA Draft Lottery.
Miffed.
I know. I wish you could be there so bad. June 22nd. Be there. Get there at 6:30, maybe even earlier if you're wanting a table, if you're wanting a spot. We are hosting a Down to Dunk lottery party. So it's going to be at the Mule in Edmond. So there are two Mule locations. This is the one in Edmond, Oklahoma. So the address is 16 South Broadway in Edmond. So come, I believe they're going to have some outdoor seating and also some nice indoor seating. So be sure to just come and enjoy it. We will be there. I figured we just need each other now more than ever with these lottery results coming. Oh, shoot. We have the tall shot, OKC, saying that he will be there. So perfect. Yeah, this is going to be a really fun event. This is kind of this will be our first event that we've had since COVID and the lockdown and everything. So we'll do that, and then followed by an NBA draft party that will be at the end of July. So should be fun. Should be a really fun environment. Should be the most like nervous environment that you've been in a long time. So come in and enjoy it. It'll be a good time. That's at the Mule in Edmond. Mikelli, what's up?
Well, playoffs are great.
Yeah.
So we are diving into prospects. So this is the best part of the year. Well, the best part would be having OKC playing high-level basketball again, which may be happen in the coming season. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, after the bubble, these playoffs are just give a different taste.
Yeah.
I mean, I just watched the condensed about Phoenix and the full game of Bucks against Nets. I mean, the physicality that is there was not the same last season. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Tucker and Durant went at each other for the entire game.
That's awesome.
And Chris Paul, man. Again, I just saw 10 minutes. But he did stuff that, I mean, you just have to watch him. It's a must-watch show, and I'm so glad that this year we have new teams that are kind of on the rise. Mm-hmm. It's a different season, and again, so much fun.
Yeah, Phoenix is really good. I hope that we get Mike Conley back, because if the Jazz do indeed go on to beat the Clippers, which is not a foregone conclusion, you know, the Clippers battled back from down from 0-2 before, so this is not done by any stretch, but if it is the Jazz, give me Mike Conley back. Give me the full rosters of these two teams against each other. I just think it would be really fun. I think it's actually a really good matchup between those two teams. You got Booker and Mitchell, you have Conley, Chris Paul, you have Gobert, Ayton, and then you have all like these, like they're both pretty deep teams with like lots of auxiliary pieces there. So to me, That would be a super fun series. And yeah, Chris Paul is balling. I'm really glad, because I thought after he got hurt against the Lakers in round one, like, oh boy. This could be bad. Give me just 1 second. Here. Talk about the playoffs for a second. I'll be right back.
You guys on the stream, have you seen the moment where he faked pass, Chris Paul, and just gave the ball some English, the ball came back to him, and and he shot that patented mid-range. That was a moment where you could see him just being, like, total confidence, completely in control of the game. And it was... I miss him. I miss Chris Paul. It was a fun season, the season that we had him here. And, yeah, Lawrence Field in the chat, that fake pass was, yeah, complete insanity. To me, though, the most insane thing about Phoenix, and too bad that I don't have, like, 3 hours a day to watch every single game, but the fact that Phoenix trusted Ayton to be one-on-one coverage against Jokic for basically the entire game and just be okay with the results, trusting him against Anthony Davis, that to me is making all the difference. And I may be a homer, I may have bias, but the fact that they hired one of the best coaches in terms of preparation of bigs and stuff like that in Mark Bryant, to me, you can see the difference in Ayton between season one and season two and three. He basically changed him. He is a guy that now welcomes physicality. He's a guy that dunks on people. And again, he's defending Jokic one-on-one. Yes, he made some mistakes, but who cares? The point is, if you have a player that can defend Jokic one-on-one, then you have a chance against Denver. And to me, yes, Chris Paul was, again, insane. But that, to me, was probably one of the keys against both the Lakers and the Nuggets. And if they face the Clippers, well, different opponent and different strategy. But I would love to see him against Gobert. Also against the Clippers, because, I mean, they don't have a natural five. And so how's Ayton respond? Does he dominate offensively because they can't guard him, or they are able to basically scheme him out of the after the court? That to me is very, very interesting going forward.
You know what Aiden's shooting in the playoffs? What percentage?
Yeah. Oh, I guess it's over 75% from the field.
He's down a little bit. Maybe wrong. 72%.
Oh, sorry.
Still pretty wild for a guy that takes 10 shots a game. It's pretty wild.
Yes.
He just doesn't miss. That's he's been tremendous. And that was one of my big questions heading into the playoffs. Like, what do we get from Ayton? And it's like, okay.
He's a lot is the answer.
He's a really good player, which has been tremendous for them. And then on the other side, you hate for injuries to kind of impact the playoffs as much, but it happens every year, whether we like to remember it or not. And it's happening right now with the Brooklyn Nets. They don't have Kyrie Irving now, who was on crutches and in a boot.
Doesn't look good.
Yeah. The initial injury didn't look good either. It's like his ankle bone, like touching, the floor like it did, is kind of nasty. So I don't know what to expect there going forward. But if you're a Bucks fan, you have to be pretty excited, because I really didn't think Milwaukee was going to get this game. I just didn't think it was going to happen. Even after Kyrie went down, I was like, okay, well, let's see what they got. And we had a really, really good Giannis game. Middleton has had two good games in a row, which is nice to see. Yeah. And then they got just enough off the bench. So I don't know, man. I think we have ourselves a series now, and now Durant's going to have to step up and do it on his own, which is something he hasn't ever really done. Like, he's never really had to do it. And the times where he's had opportunities to do it, like against the Grizzlies in round two, when after Russ got hurt in that Patrick Beverley injury, and that was so long ago, but still, you know, he didn't rise to that occasion then. I think it's going to be even harder now because...
Oh, yeah. Like, he has way less talent around him right now.
Yeah, way less talent. Compared to back then. I mean, like, he's their big rim protector. Like, that's it. Because they're off the bench. It's, you know, Jeff Green came back yesterday. He played almost 30 minutes. And then it's Blake. Like, it's Kevin. Like, so much falls on Kevin's shoulders. And I worry about that for him. Because, he had to play 42 minutes yesterday.
Yeah, that's way too much.
That's way too much on a guy who just had an Achilles injury.
Yeah, Steve Nash decided to pull the starters with 4:28, I think, remaining. So it was a wise decision.
And he still played 42 minutes.
Yeah.
He would have been 46. Easy.
Yeah, he rested, I think, a minute and a half in the second half and then the same in the third. And that was it.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And to be honest with you, I don't think that Milwaukee can stay with Brooklyn with two stars. They just don't have. Yeah. Unless they decide to go to do what they did in the third, I think, where they decide to go with Giannis at the five.
Yeah.
I still don't understand why that. I know that Brook Lopez is way better player than Connaughton or guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much to exploit if you have Giannis at the five, because Connaughton is a way faster shooter than Lopez is.
Mm-hmm.
And they will just live with Lopez taking threes. Because, I mean, if you have KD, and it happened a lot of time when Lopez was on the court, if you have KD roaming around the paint and the ball goes to Lopez, KD can close out
mm-hmm.
and avoid the shot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really spacing. There is no space for Giannis to work when Lopez is out there. So mm-hmm. I really don't know why with Kyrie out, they had like just better players. But I wonder mm-hmm. if this is something that they have to do. They have to downsize in order to, well, if Kai seems a no-go for the rest of the series. We'll see. Harden is a no-go. So it probably doesn't matter, but I would love to see what happens when Giannis is at the five. And I'm afraid that if they face the Clippers in the finals, which can still happen, then they have to do that.
Yeah.
And to me, it's still the best way to maximize guys like Ben Simmons and Antetokounmpo. Because, yes, they will be... You cannot play them 40 minutes like that. But you need to play them 25 minutes, 20 minutes. The death lineup in the playoffs was like 15-plus minutes a night with Raymond at the center spot. And that is how you unlock completely a guy like Giannis, because you have space. You can run more.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's really no reason not to run him at the five against this team. There's just... Yeah, you're not playing against Jokic, or even if you were, you still should probably do it. It's putting Giannis in the best position to succeed.
Yeah. Are you telling me that Giannis cannot face Jokic?
Maybe
with Embiid, you question.
Embiid is probably the only one, right? Like, if they make it, if they both make it onto the next round, then that's what you kind of question.
But even then, I would try, because I want to tire out Embiid. I want him to be either stationary or just to try to guard the pick and roll.
Yeah.
I just want to see that. Mm-hmm. Run a Forbes Giannis pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And Embiid has to come out because Forbes is a great shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Run a Middleton Giannis pick and roll. They did it last night.
Mm-hmm.
And it works because Middleton is a crazy shooter, a very fast shooter. So either Embiid stays down and then, I mean, just let Middleton cook,
mm-hmm.
or he comes out, and then you have everything open for Giannis.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's exciting now that I think we have a series with this. But again, like, I'd rather see everybody going at it. But anyways,
is there any chance that Harden goes for game 6-7?
I don't know. They've been very weird about even the language that they use with regards to. They call it tightness. Let me tell you what the injury is. So I don't know.
Tightness.
You know.
Yeah, doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Could be anything.
Yeah, I have no clue. It makes you think it's worse than it really is. If it was bad, if it was fine and he'd be day to day, they'd tell you what the injury is. But
maybe they were very confident about winning game 4. And to be honest with you, I thought that
I was quite confident too. Yeah, I thought.
So maybe he dresses up for game 5 and this series is not a series anymore, because I think that Harden can do way more damage than Kyrie, too, especially if you have Brook on the court. But we'll see.
We'll see. there have been, Harden has had his moments where he should have been dominating, and yeah. he doesn't.
Like that against Lou Dort, for example.
Lou Dort, that Spurs series a few years ago. I mean, there's a lot of instances. So I'm not
that
so sure.
Manu block.
Yeah.
You remember?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. From behind. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Amazing. Yes.
Yeah. What a moment.
It's one of my personal best moments of my life was that Manu block.
Yeah, and game 7 was even weirder because they were competitive in game 6 and then game 7 they just didn't compete.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very weird series. That is probably the series that raised more questions about Harden and about the toll that he sustained during the season or the fact that he doesn't have stamina for like playing at this pace in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All these series are pretty intriguing. Maybe the least is Sixers Hawks, you think?
Mm-hmm.
Unless the Hawks can
get
this
next game.
Yeah,
I watched very little.
Yeah, it feels like the Sixers are just going to out talent and out tough this Hawks team, which is okay. Like, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay if you're a Hawks fan because they're still very, very young. They're without DeAndre Hunter, who is their probably their second best player.
Yeah, and when we discuss the Hawks, I tend to agree with what you said about the fact that they did everything a little bit too early.
Yeah.
But there are two but. One is Bogdanović is a very, very good player in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
And he can raise the ceiling quite a lot. And also Hunter. Hunter is a big if. So if he's able to be a true number two guy, a very good number two guy, then you can see why they did it. And like Bogdanović is a big opportunity, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a player that if you can get, I think he's 29. He has, I think, a full contract left of very, very good basketball. So,
yep.
Those to me are I would say point of views that where you can say, well, I kind of understand. I probably tried to wait a year longer, but I can see why they did it. Now, granted, I don't see them being in par with Milwaukee, Philly, or the Nets anytime soon, unless, again, Hunter and Trey becomes a really, really good pairing that leads you to higher than where they are now. And they have a lot to do with Collins in the offseason. That, to me, will tell a lot about the direction that they want to take, because that contract is an avenue to get something that really helps you. And he's a guy, I know that we are going completely off topic, but stay with me for another second.
Yeah.
I think that Boston could be, Boston and Marcus Smart can be a trade partner. Collins is a player that can help Boston to some degree. And I can see if they don't find anything for Kemba and they want to upgrade, Collins can be a player that you say, well, let's just sign and trade. We'll give you Smart and a couple of young players and probably give us a pick. So something like that. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know how to construct the deal. But that to me, and having Smart, and then you have 7-8 players that are really, really good.
Yeah. And Smart's perfect on that Hawks team.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know what to think about Collins. They need to get a good defensive center to play alongside.
Well, and I think that you can do with Hunter instead of him, and just having more wings instead of like just play Capela and Okongwu, and just don't play another semi big. Just be just have like Hunter, Gallo, or Bogdanović, and guys like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, that's fine. And I'm just talking about Celtics.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yes, probably. Probably so.
That's why I like Capela. Capela's nice. Like, he's a nice piece next to him. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but I still don't like the idea of having Collins and another big because the spacing is just not there.
Yeah. Well, you got to find somebody that defends.
Yeah, or being just multi-tool guy. Very good defenders from one to four.
Yeah.
Which with Kemba is not the case. Anyway, enough probably for Boston.
Let's go take a look. So we have the lottery in 8 days, 7 hours, 48 minutes, and 21 seconds. It's going to be here so soon, Michele. One, how are you feeling? How are you feeling about this?
I feel as a mathematician that we have good odds.
Yeah.
That is my feeling.
Okay.
And we have very good odds about getting one top five pick. Not 100% odds, so we, you know, it's fine. Whatever we get, it's probably fine.
So let's send the lottery a couple times on tankathon.com and see where we land.
Yeah.
Oh, sheesh. 1 in 5.
Okay, let's...
Should we stop?
No. We need to get at least one where we are at 7 or 6.
Yeah. So we just rolled one in five for those listening on the pod. If you're watching on YouTube, you can watch these rolls with us. So subscribe to our YouTube channel. That would be wonderful. Oh gosh, 1 in 5 again. 2 rolls in a row. This is getting...
Why are you wasting this?
Oh gosh, 1 in 18. That's 3 in a row. There's 5 and 6.
But it's still awesome, 5 and 6.
5 and 6 is so great because you can get whoever's left over. We don't know who these other teams like. It could just be Kuminga, which...
Yeah.
Cool. Take him.
And again, it could be that Sacramento goes for Cade, Detroit goes for Evan Mobley, or for Suggs, and Minnesota says, well...
Is that who
we
want?
I don't like either.
Yeah.
Yeah, we like Kuminga best, so okay. Let's... Trade me 5 and 6 and I'll get 3.
Yeah.
So these things are up there.
Yep. There's a lot of stuff that can be up in the air. Here's 5 and 18. Still acceptable.
Yeah.
If you're the Thunder and with the kind of season you have and with the kind of roster that you have. You know, if you're Houston or Detroit, like you've got to go get one of these top picks is essential. And it's essential for OKC, too. Like, it really is.
Yeah.
I try to downplay it just for my own emotions, I think. And here's also an outcome that can happen. Houston gets the number one pick. OKC gets 6. And that's 6 and 18. That's a rough outcome. That's not one that you would celebrate.
No, definitely not.
A whole lot. Because they fall... 2 slots, and you don't get the Houston pick. Because in a lot of cases, when OKC falls multiple slots, you also get the Houston pick. But this is kind of the doomsday scenario.
Yeah.
That is certainly possible. And that's when you have to look at the OKC scouting staff and their basketball ops and say, okay, go put the work in. Figure out the guy from 6 to 14 that's going to be the best and take whoever it is. I mean, that will be their job. And it's the same job 1 through 5, but the talent that's there it's better. Just frankly, it's better. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And then after that, we're going to answer as many of these Twitter questions as we can. All right, we're back from this quick break, and we are going to answer your Twitter questions. First question from @TylerKField. If OKC lands the 5th pick, how much would it cost, or would you be willing to give up 5 to move up 1 spot to 4?
You know, you cannot answer like this, with a question like this, I think. It depends. It really depends who's there.
Yeah.
If somehow you are... extremely high on Giddy or Scotty Barnes or guys like that, then nothing. is the right answer. If Kuminga is your guy and Kuminga is there and you know that you can have a deal, then another first and maybe another asset. That's if you want to say 6 plus 18 plus a second rounder or 2 second rounders. If Kuminga, you think that Kuminga has superstar potential, yeah, just do it. Do 1 first and 2 seconds. Why not? Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. I think that, again, if in a situation like this, Orlando is not as high on Kuminga, mainly because they have all copycats of Kuminga already and they like another guy, then why not?
Yeah. Okay, we're going to backtrack a little bit. Michele, you have some stats for me that I forgot about. I need you to give me some stats. And then we'll go back we tease the Twitter questions. We'll come back.
I will be extremely quick. So Shea's overall plus minus is minus 8.2. Can you guess what is the plus minus when he doesn't play with either Roby or Baze?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
So minus 8.2 is the plus minus of the entire season. 2,000 plus possessions.
Minus 15?
Plus 12.
What?
So whenever Shea plays and Baze and Roby are on the bench, Shea has
Sorry. I'm understanding now. Okay. Yeah. Oh gosh. That's an indictment.
To me, that is Shea needs a four that can space the court for him. And Horford was a very good spacer. So either Horford or Muscala works great. But the fact that whenever he is with lineups with Kenrich at the four or with Dort at the four, lineups like that, he is very effective. Granted, the sample size is very slim. But I wonder if the lack of spacing and the lack of shooting around Shea at the four position is part of the reason why those units were not as effective. Mm-hmm. And it's not that Roby and Baze are bad players. It's that if you want to play them with Shea, I would see them more as super small ball fives, and not fours.
They're not respected shooters, right?
No, they are not. And with Shea, you need either a very vertical pick and roll partner with shooters, or you just need guys that can space the court. And I think that, again, this is probably meaningless, but I see that I checked a few lineups with two or more non-shooters, and that affects Shea so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, which is... it'll be very interesting to see how they build this roster around Shea, but it's shooting has always been important. It's never not been important. It's important no matter who you have, but it may be even more important when it comes to Shea, just because of the speed at which he plays. Like, you need real respected shooting on the wing for sure.
Okay, second question for you. So I dug a little bit into Pokuševski efficiency stats. And overall, he had a very, very bad 41% effective field goal. Can you guess how that number goes when OKC was losing? So when OKC lost the game or when they won the game? So 41 is the overall. Granted, they lost way more games. Mm-hmm. With him on the court, but
maybe like 31 in losses and like 53 in wins.
That is quite close. 51 in wins and 37 in losses.
Okay.
Because there is more losses. So I said, well, of course it will happen to everyone. Not the case. So Shea is 57, 60 and 54. So +3, -3. Theo is basically 49 flat.
Yeah.
Lu Dort -3, +3 again. Horford very similar. Kenrich is a bit more on the winning side, like 60 on average. 60. That's
crazy.
That's
wild.
68-57. So 68 when they win. So the closest is Isaiah Roby, 52 overall, 62 and then 48. This might be through shooting, so I not effective field goal. But anyway, my point is there are very few players in OKC that has this kind of wide margin between their average and what they do when OKC wins and when OKC loses. So I, of course, you don't want to imply the fact that when Pokuševski plays well, OKC wins. But it is a trend that I want to monitor somehow because there were games where Pokuševski was awesome and the flow was insanely good. And when he has just basically no flow and all misses, you can see OKC playing miserable basketball. So I wonder if a good version of Pokuševski can impact winning next year. That is more of a question, more so than like some magic correlation, because of course, if your players, if your role players play well, then you have more chances to win. That's not a big surprise. But Pokuševski numbers are quite extreme in that, and I wonder if with him improving, if he improves next season, if we have a bump just because of that. Last one. Can you tell me what is the top five players in terms of assisted threes? Wait a second. So I want to know the players in OKC that are assisting their teammates better. So I have here a list. On passes of Al Horford, the teammates shot X percent. I want to know which one are the best.
So the best category. The best passers.
I wouldn't say best passers, but the ones...
The passes that led to the best percentage from three.
Great.
Yes, okay.
Give me the counting, top five.
Is counting everybody?
No, I took away like guys like Josh Hall and guys like that. But George Hill, for example, is in the list.
He is on the list. Okay.
Yeah.
Shea.
No.
No. Dort.
No, and the yes, Lou Dort is second, 37% on his passes. Okay. Shea is at 35.4, and the reason why is that he assisted a lot of shots to Pokuševski, Baisley, and Roby. So Dort is number two.
Teo
is quite bad, 31.5. Teo is one of the worst, actually.
George Hill, as you mentioned?
George Hill is worse than Teo Maledon, actually.
So Ty 30%. Jerome?
Ty Jerome is first, 38.3%.
Wow. Interesting.
On roughly 4 or 5 passes per game.
Wow. Okay. Let's see. Who else is passing? Baze?
Baze is number 4.
Okay.
36.5. Poku is number 5, 36.45, so Kenrich? Slightly better than... No, Kenrich is 35.3.
Okay. Roby?
The last one is Hamidou Diallo.
Oh, okay, we're still counting Hami. Hami was good. Hami was super good for OKC. Yeah.
Especially corner threes, yes. This is, again, meaningless, but the number that I was trying to go to get after was the number of passes that Shea dedicated to threes, and it is actually half of his passes for shots are for threes, which is very good. 9 threes per game generated by Shea. And that is also like something where you can see OKC improving next year, because the fact that they shot just 35.4% on threes, it's actually a low percentage compared to the fact that Shea delivers pretty good passes. Okay, all meaningless, but I think that these are weird stats that to me have something into that is worth looking next season. So the fact, again, and to me the fact that Shea needs to play with good shooters is again probably trivial, but it's in the number as well.
Yeah. No, I think it's good to go back and look at some of this stuff, because I think sometimes the things we remember in our heads are wrong about players and what they did this past season. Okay, I've got very few minutes left, but let's fire through a few of these. From my buddy Peter Bergman at Peterman33. Is it a good tanking strategy to trade for a good player who is injured? Example, Jamal Murray. Doesn't make the team better short term, but it could contribute on up on the upswing in a couple seasons.
Yeah, but those are hard to trade for. I mean, if you can trade for Clay, well, sure. But it's a high risk because you don't know how they come back. And it's also high risk for the teams he's trading him for, because it's why do you want to trade Jamal Murray?
They won't trade Jamal Murray.
Yeah, exactly. Likely what you get back is not enough, and it's not worth for both sides. It's a nice idea, but it's the way in which you do it is exactly what OKC had this past season. You have your best player injured, and then you tank. Mm-hmm. Not like getting a player for another team.
Yeah, it's tricky. At JPOSU, if you could somehow have a choice in this upcoming draft between 20-year-old versions of Kawhi, Chris Paul, and Anthony Davis to put next to SGA on this Thunder team, knowing how they turn out as players, who would you choose?
So it's Kawhi,
Chris Paul, and Anthony Davis.
Probably AD.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, it's...
A healthy AD? If health counts, then it's probably Kawhi or Chris. But if we don't count...
They all have health issues.
Yeah, but... Yes, but... But, I mean, AD has probably the more...
He's had the most. Like, yeah, he's had a lot. Kawhi's... Do you want Kawhi in OKC? Does the personality also impact it?
Who cares?
Yeah, probably AD. If you give me a healthy Anthony Davis, the guy's a monster. He makes your defense, like your defense already like top 10. Boom. He's here. Great.
Yeah.
He can hit threes. He can create it for himself. He can pick and roll, pick and pop. Like he's
give me that guy.
Yeah. Let's see.
This is probably a way of telling us that we should pick Mobley in this draft. But anyway.
Maybe.
Suggs Green and or Suggs Cade and I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe so. Perhaps.
Suggs Kuminga and Mobley.
We just need to know that Mobley is going to have the same fire that AD has.
Well, if Mobley is an Anthony Davis type of player, of course, you need to draft him.
Yeah, maybe so. Okay, last question before I've got to go. At Bangelope says, what's the best summer drink in Italy?
I would say Aperol Spritz, which is basically can we discuss alcoholic beverage or just virgin beverage?
Whatever.
Yeah, it's basically white wine, sparkling wine, plus some alcoholic beverages called Aperol, which is a little bit sour, and the mix is just insane. Refreshing, good. It's good with appetizer. If you come to Italy, you need to get a spritz.
Okay.
So that's it.
That sounds delightful. All right. Everybody have a delightful day. Please come to the Mule with us, Mule in Edmond, with us next Tuesday. Get there early. The spots will be limited, so be sure that you get there quickly. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, and we will talk to you guys again. On Wednesday.